He shook his head, swallowed. A smile hinted at the edge of his lips before he withdrew his hand from hers to rub his jaw. He cleared his throat, but his voice still came out rough when he said, "Tell me about this new proposal." She stared down at the back of her hand, missing the warmth of his touch. "I want you to teach me how to be in a relationship. Not the sex part, but the together part. Like tonight. The talking and the sharing and the holding hands. New things are scary for me, but with you, I can handle them and even enjoy them. I want to hire you to be my full-time practice boyfriend." His lips parted, but he didn't speak for the longest time.
"What do you mean, not the sex part?"
"I want to take the sex out. I don't want to be like that woman at the club and force you to be intimate with me. My hope is that if I get good enough at the together part of a relationship, a man won't mind working on the sex part with me."
"Who said anything about forcing?"
he asked with narrowed eyes.
"Everything I've done with you up to now has been voluntary."
She suppressed a grimace and laced her fingers together so she couldn't tap them. "The next time a man kisses me, I need him to do it because he wants to. Without a monetary incentive. After seeing Michael with his ex-client, everything they'd done thus far left an unsavory taste in her mouth. Her reasoning when hiring an escort to teach her sex had been oversimplified. "I know you weren't initially interested in doing repeat sessions, and my new proposal would require even more FaceTime. Because of that, I'm willing to pay you $50,000 up front for the first month. Maybe we could try this for 3 to 6 months, at the same rate? Is that a good time frame for a practice relationship? Everything is negotiable, of course. I don't know what the industry standard is for this type of arrangement."
$50,000.
He shook his head like he was questioning his hearing.
"Stella, I can't..."
"Before you say no, think about it," she said as her heart rate jumped. "Please." He pushed away from the table and got to his feet.
"I need some time."
"Of course." She stood up and held her breath, nervous, unsure what to do.
"As much as you need."
Wrapping a hand around her upper arm, he took a half step toward her. He leaned down a few inches before he caught himself, eyes intent on her mouth. He outlined the edges of her lips with his fingertips, sending shivers of awareness outward.
"I'll tell you by next Friday. Is that okay?"
"That's fine." He bit his teeth into his bottom lip, like he was thinking about kissing her, and her own lips tingled in response.
"Good night then, Stella."
"Good night, Michael." In a state of breathless numbness, she watched as he let himself out. Chapter 12. Jab, jab, cross. Jab, jab, cross. Cross, cross, cross. Sweat trickled into Michael's eyes, burning him, and he swiped a forearm over his face before slamming a fist into the punching bag again. Whenever thoughts crept back into his head, he hit harder. Too many fucking thoughts. Too many fucking feelings. Jab, dodge, hook. Jab, cross. His arms burned, and he welcomed the pain. Welcomed the way it seared everything out of his brain. There was nothing but the hard resistance of the sand in the bag, and the jolting impact that shocked up his arm and down his leg. Jab, jab, jab. Cross, cross, cross. Harder. Could he punch the bag straight off its chains? Maybe. Cross, 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 cross. Loud knocks distracted him mid-punch, and he glared at the front door. His annoyance quickly morphed into worry. Shit. Was it the landlord? Throwing a towel around his neck, he went to open the door.
Sup, cuz?
Quan brushed past him, set a six-pack of beer bottles on the coffee table, and tossed his motorcycle jacket on the couch. Without pausing to look at Michael, he strode into the kitchen and began digging through the fridge.
Got anything to eat? You're the one who works at a restaurant,
Michael said on his way back to his punching bag. It still swung side to side from the pummeling he'd given it,
and he steadied it before he drove a fist into the faded leather. As he got back into beating the shit out of the bag, he heard a series of beeps, followed by the whirring of the microwave.
"I'm eating your leftovers," Quan called out.
Michael ignored him and continued punching. The microwave beeped, and shortly afterward, Quan carried a steaming bowl to the couch, sat, and proceeded to eat Michael's dinner, very noisily. When Michael couldn't take the slurping sounds any longer, he paused in his punching and said,
"Most people eat at the kitchen table."
Quan shrugged.
"I like the couch better."
He shoved a fork full of noodles into his mouth and slurp-chewed, arching his eyebrows at Michael in a what-gives way. Michael gritted his teeth and tried to find his rhythm again.
"You've been hitting the weights hard lately? Your arms are bigger. They're like grapefruits, man."
Steadying the bag, Michael asked,
"Why are you here? You gonna apologize to me or what? Because you're the shittiest cousin ever, Michael. You really are."
He shut his eyes, exhaling.
"I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm gonna have to ask you to try that again."
He pushed away from the bag and threw himself onto the couch next to his cousin.
"I'm really sorry. It's just complicated right now, and I..."
He rested his elbows on his knees and covered his face with his wrapped hands.
"I'm sorry. I don't get why you lied about not having a girlfriend. No one special, my ass. You scared she won't like the family or what?"
Quan asked with a sneer. Michael resisted the urge to tear his hair out.
"I don't want to talk about this." "The fuck, Michael?"
Quan set his bowl on the coffee table next to the beer and grabbed his jacket.
"I'll leave then."
He stalked to the door and grabbed the knob.
"Today was crappy, okay?"
He began yanking the boxing wraps from his wrists.
"All my days are crap days. But today was worse. I thought my mom was dead. When I got there, she was stooped over in her chair, and it didn't look like she was breathing. I lost my shit."
Quan turned around, worry lining his face.
"Is she okay? Why didn't I hear about this earlier? Was it like the other two times when you found her in the bathroom? Is she in the hospital right now?"
One of the wraps came off, and Michael switched to his other hand, reliving the fear and the relief and the embarrassment.
"She's fine. She just fell asleep. When I went crazy, she woke up and yelled at me."
Quan's expression went from relieved to amused.
"You're such a mama's boy. You know that? Like you aren't. You should tell my mom that. Maybe she'll stop being so mean."
Michael rolled his eyes as he coiled his boxing wraps back up.
"After that, someone came looking for my dad. They were trying to serve him. Not sure if it was the same person from before or the IRS or someone new. It's always fun seeing people's faces when I tell them, yeah, I'm his son. I can see them sizing me up and making assumptions. And then when I tell them I have no idea where my dad is, or if he's even alive, I get the doubt or the pity. My mom spent the rest of the day repeating old stories about how fucked up he is. You're the only one she tells, you know. She won't even talk to my mom about that stuff, and they're like this."
Quan crossed two fingers.
"You just gotta let her do it."
"Yeah,
I know."
He understood it was good for his mom to talk about it, and most times, he handled it pretty well. But lately, it had gotten harder for him, because he was a selfish asshole. Like father, like son. He was tempted to take Stella up on her offer, even though his gut told him he should say no. She would be better off spending her time with tech moguls and Nobel laureates, people who were actually good matches for her, and could afford to be with her even when she wasn't paying them. Not like Michael. He would give almost anything to take the money out of their equation, but the bills didn't stop, so he couldn't either.
"You want me to go, or you want me to stay?"
Quan asked from where he stood in front of the door. Michael took two beers out of the cardboard container, popped the top off one using the other, and set the open bottle on the coffee table.
"Stay."
Quan snatched the bottle on his way over and sat down next to Michael on the couch. After taking a deep swallow, he traded the beer for the noodles and took up where he'd left off, only not as loud now. Michael popped the top off his own bottle with the edge of the table,
turned on the TV, and drank as he absently flipped through the channels.
So, about your girl, Kwan said. How long you been seeing her?
Michael took a long drag from his bottle. He needed to be buzzed if he was going to talk about this.
Stella's not really my girl. It's only been a few weeks. Whatever, man, you've got serious pussy mojo. If you want a girl, she's yours.
Michael snorted and drank more.
I don't want a girl who likes me just because I fuck her right.
He wanted a girl who liked him for him.
You're so full of shit.
Kwan swapped his empty bowl for his beer and took a swig.
She almost cried when that blonde plastered herself to your face. She's into you.
Michael's heart threatened all sorts of dramatic gymnastics at his cousin's words, and he gave himself a stern mental shake as he stared into his beer bottle. It probably wasn't what he thought. He shouldn't jump to conclusions.
That's cool. That's cool?
Kwan arched an eyebrow.
You're not in seventh grade anymore. You should be like, that's awesome, man. Thanks for telling me. I can't see from inside my ass. Do you need sex advice? Because I know shit.
Michael couldn't stop the laughter from cracking out of his lungs.
No, I'm good on the sex advice. Thanks. But if you ever need some tips...
Kwan fingered the raised letters on the side of his beer bottle like he had something to say, but was trying to figure out how. Pinning Michael with a weighted gaze, he finally asked,
Have you ever thought she's kinda like Kai?
Michael smiled slightly.
Yeah, just a little, though.
Stella was on the socially awkward side like Kai, but she was far more expressive and sensitive.
Why do you ask?
Kwan arched his eyebrows and drank his beer.
No reason.
After a moment of consideration, he pointed his bottle at Michael.
So, have you two... You know.
Michael took a long drag of beer.
Nope. Really? Kwan grimaced. Is she a virgin? Shit. Is she saving it for marriage? Run like my mom is after you.
Michael shrugged.
She needs me to go slow. I don't mind. I kinda like it.
Every new response he earned from Stella felt special. Just like in the old eBay commercials, it's better when you win it. Maybe because it had always been so easy for him before.
Fucking liar. You're probably jacking off 10 times a day. I didn't say I wasn't jacking off.
Kwan shot forward to the front of the couch.
Oh, fuck. Am I sitting on your cum cushions? Do you really want to know?
Michael asked with a smirk.
You're disgusting. You know that?
Kwan got up and sat on the coffee table, brushing at himself like he'd been contaminated. Michael laughed, and the two of them spent a moment contemplating their beards. When he couldn't hold back any longer, Michael asked,
What did you think of Stella? Did you like her?
He braced himself for the answer, realizing he cared about his cousin's opinion. How stupid was that? Even if he did accept Stella's proposal, he'd only be her practice boyfriend. Their practice relationship would end up as soon as she gained the confidence to enter a real relationship with someone better.
Yeah, she's cute. A lot sweeter than the girls you used to go for. Your mom is going to go nuts over her.
Michael downed the rest of his beer. Not fucking likely. They'd have to meet first, and he couldn't see that happening.
What's her last name? Stella what?
Kwan asked as he pulled out his phone.
Why? I want to see if she has a LinkedIn profile. I do this with every guy my sister dates. Aren't you curious?
Yeah, he was curious. Lane. Stella Lane. A persistent buzzing dragged Stella out of yet another heated Michael dream. For this entire past week, she hadn't been able to stop thinking about him. At work, she tried to focus on her data. But the words and numbers turned into body parts that fit together in fascinating ways. She fantasized about his hands, his mouth, his smile, his eyes, his words, his laugh, his presence. When she slept, dreams of Michael plagued her. So intense the craving of her body woke her at odd hours of the night. Last Friday had tipped her over the line. There was no doubt about it. Stella was officially obsessed with Michael. And they might never see each other again. It was Friday now, and he still hadn't texted or called. Was this one of those situations where no news meant no? Her heart sank, and her limbs went heavy with sadness. The infernal buzzing continued, distracting her. She groped at the nightstand until she located her phone. Squinting at the screen, she saw it was her housekeeper. She coughed to clear her throat of the sound of hot dream sex. Hello? Ms. Lane, I can't make it today. My daughter is sick and the daycare won't take her. Oh, that's fine. Thanks for calling. I hope she gets better soon. Can I make it up next week? Sure. No problem. She glanced at the clock, and her heart almost stopped. It was just short of 8 o'clock. She was usually sitting at her desk by now. She almost hit the end button when she heard her housekeeper say, Oh, Ms. Lane, you'll want to take your clothes to the dry cleaners since I can't do it. Oh, all right. Thanks for reminding me. No problem. Goodbye. Stella considered skipping the dry cleaners. Not only did she not know which one she used, she didn't like the idea of ruining her morning routine by adding an extra step. It was irritating and anxiety-causing. New place, new people, and after the disaster at the club, her tolerance for new things was at an all-time low. In the end, it was the idea of having the wrong number of skirts and shirts hanging in her closet that had her perusing Yelp for nearby dry cleaners. She settled on an establishment that was ranked above all the others, even though it was a little out of the way. Off routine and harried for time. Her boss would probably call the police when he didn't see her in the office first thing. She drove east down El Camino Real, leaving Palo Alto and entering Mountain View. After about 5 minutes, she turned into the parking lot of a small strip mall with well-maintained wooden shingle siding and oak trees along the front sidewalk. Old-fashioned signs labeled a coffee shop, a martial arts studio, a sandwich place, and Paris Dry Cleaning and Tailors. She looped her purse and bag of clothes over her shoulder and clicked over the asphalt toward the dry cleaners. A tiny old lady with a hunched back, chipmunk cheeks, and sunken lips stood before the doors. A paisley scarf had been folded along the diagonal, wrapped around her head, and tied beneath her chin. She was quite possibly the cutest grown human Stella had ever seen. She held a massive pair of lawn shears in her gnarled hands, brandishing them ineffectually at the oak tree in front of the store. When Stella halted, bewildered and amazed by the sight, the old lady flipped the shears around with a dangerous swinging motion, nearly slicing her own leg off in the process, and offered the handles to her. She pointed at Stella and then the tree. Stella looked over her shoulder, but, as she'd suspected, the old lady truly meant her. I don't think I should... The old lady pointed at a low branch on the tree. Cut. Stella searched about the parking lot, but there wasn't anyone else here. She stepped onto the sidewalk and took the giant and very heavy shears from the lady. These things were a lawsuit waiting to happen. Maybe we should call the landscaping company. They'd probably be happy to send someone. The old lady shook her head. Once again, she pointed at Stella's chest, and then the tree. Cut. Cut this? She indicated the low branch with the tip of the shears. Mmm. The old lady nodded enthusiastically, her black eyes shining within her wrinkled face. It appeared Stella had no choice. If she didn't do it, she feared the old lady would try doing it herself and mortally wound herself in the process. How she managed to hold the shears without slipping all the discs in her spine was a mystery. Moving awkwardly in her high heels with her bags over her shoulder and enormous shears in her hands, she prepared to step into the landscaping at the base of the tree so she could get near enough to cut the branch down. No, 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 no! Stella froze with one foot in the air, her heart hopping around her chest like a Mexican jumping bean. The old lady pointed at the landscaping, which, now that she looked more closely, was not landscaping at all. It looked like an herb garden. Teetering, Stella dropped her foot in the dirt between plants. Mmm, the old lady murmured before pointing at the branch again. You cut. Through a miracle or adrenaline-induced superhuman strength, Stella lifted the shears above her head, wedged them around the base of the small branch, and snipped it free. The branch fell onto the cement sidewalk like a felled bird. When the old lady set a hand on her knee and prepared to bend over to retrieve it, Stella hurried away from the tree and grabbed it for her. The old lady smiled as she took the branch and patted Stella's shoulder. Then she eyed Stella's laundry bag, pulled the lip open so she could peer inside, and placed her hand on the strap, steering Stella toward the front doors of the dry cleaners. The old lady pushed the glass door open with surprising strength. After Stella entered, the old lady snatched the shears, hid them behind her back like no one would notice them there, and disappeared through a door behind the vacant front counter. Stella gazed about, taking in the two headless mannequins in the window display, who modeled a precisely constructed black tux and a form-fitting lace wedding gown. The interior of the store was calming blue-gray walls, soft white draping curtains, and lots of natural light. A fitting was going on in an adjacent room. A respectable-looking matron in a sleeveless white jumpsuit stood on a raised platform before a trifold of mirrors. Stella went numb with astonishment. At the woman's feet kneeled Michael. He wore loose jeans and a plain white t-shirt that stretched around his biceps, looking wholesome and beautiful, and completely at home. A measuring tape looped behind his neck and dangled down his chest, and his sculpted wrist sported a small pincushion, replete with dozens of protruding pins. Balanced over his right ear was a blue chalk pencil.
"What kind of heels are you planning to wear with this?" he asked.
"I was planning on these, actually." The lady pulled her pant leg up to reveal regular white pumps.
"You should go open-toe, Margie, and 1 inch higher."
Margie's lips thinned and she angled her foot, turned it side to side. After a moment, she nodded.
"You're right. I have just the pair."
"I'm going to add another inch to the hem, then. How does the waist feel?"
"It's too comfortable.
I figured you planned to eat in this."
"My tailor thinks of everything."
She pivoted and stared at the profile of her pinned-up waistline in the mirrors. Michael rolled his eyes, but he smiled.
"Remember the lipstick?"
"Yes, yes. How could I forget? Fire Engine Red. You'll have this ready by next Friday?"
"Yeah, it'll be ready."
"Excellent."
She slinked off to a changing room in the jumpsuit, and Michael picked up a floral print garment that had been draped over the back of a chair. He adjusted the pins and snatched the chalk pencil from above his ear to mark the fabric, his eyes focused and his hands competent. Inside Stella's mind, missing pieces clicked into place. This was Michael in his natural state. This was what he did when he wasn't escorting. Michael was a tailor. He shook the garment out and draped it over his arm before turning to retrieve yet another pin-strewn piece. Catching sight of her from his peripheral vision, he said,
"I'll be with you in a sec."
His eyes locked on hers, and his face went slack. He froze. She froze.
"How did you?"
He glanced out the front windows like maybe he'd find the answer to his unfinished question outside. Her heart pitter-pattered. This had to look really bad. Stalker bad. Not fair. Not fair. She'd only just realized she was obsessed with him today. She hadn't had time to stalk him like a fanatic. Now she'd cost herself whatever slim chance she'd had at a full-time arrangement. She backed up a step. "I'll go." He strode quickly across the room and caught her hand before she could leave.
"Stella."
Her whole arm jumped in response to his touch, and she wanted to cry. "I just needed my clothes dry cleaned. I didn't know you worked here. I'm not stalking. I know it looks bad." His expression softened.
"It actually looks like you have clothes in need of dry cleaning."
He lifted the bag of clothes from her shoulder.
"Let me ring you up."
He took her things to the front counter and began counting shirts with professional efficiency. His cheeks, however, were unusually pink. "Is this awkward?" she asked, hating that she was making him uncomfortable.
"A little. Believe it or not, this is the first time I've run into a client here. 7 shirts,
I'm assuming 7 skirts, too. He counted them out into a separate pile and searched her face. Do you work every day? She nodded jerkily. I prefer the office on the weekends. His mouth tilted up at the corner. You would. There was no judgment from him, no criticism, no advice that it was bad for her health and her social life. He didn't think there was something wrong with her. Stella wanted to leap over the counter and throw herself into his arms. He began to set the laundry bag aside when he noticed there was still something inside. As he upended it, the blue dress tumbled out. His eyes lifted to hers and smoldered. Stella gripped the counter as ice cream memories flickered through her head. Chilled silken lips, mint chocolate chip, and the taste of his mouth. Unhurried kisses in a room full of people. Do you have any special directions for your clothes? He asked in a rough voice. Blinking away her memories, she forced her mind into the present. No starch. I don't like the feel of it on your skin, he finished, running his thumb over the back of her hand. She nodded and searched for something to say. Her gaze landed on the blue cocktail dress. I bought this dress because I like the color and the fabric. With its crisp silk texture and structure, it must have complemented Michael's gorgeous suit nicely. The suit, she whispered. Did you make it? His eyelashes swept downward, and a boyish grin covered his face. Yeah. Her mouth fell open. If he could do that, then why in the world was he escorting? My grandfather was a tailor. Apparently it runs in my blood. I like making clothes. Would you make clothes for me? You'd have to stand still for a long time. It's not sexy. Would you really want that? His tone was matter-of-fact, but the look in his eyes was not. It took Stella a moment before she realized it was vulnerability. Was it possible Michael didn't think someone could be interested in him for more than his body? I've had clothes made for me before. Remember? I know what it's like. It's worth it to me. You're talented. I want your designs. That's right. I forgot. That boyish grin flashed again, looking almost shy. And she wanted to wrap herself around him and hold him forever. I've been expecting news from you, she whispered. His smile faded as his expression went serious. I needed to think about it. Are you accepting my proposal? Please don't say no. Are you sure you still want to issue it? Of course. She couldn't think of a single reason why she would have changed her mind. No sex? She took a breath and nodded. That's right. Leaning forward, he asked in a low voice, so you can be sure the next man to kiss you or touch you only does it because he wants to? Yes. She leaned toward him as she anticipated his answer, almost afraid to exhale. I accept. She smiled in dizzying relief. Thank. He tipped her face upward with a hand on her jaw and kissed her. Electric sensation crackled through her. If it weren't for the counter, she would have fallen. At her murmur, he deepened the kiss, taking her mouth with his tongue in the same way she wanted him to. The door behind the counter opened, and someone marched out. They tore apart like guilty teenagers. Michael cleared his throat and busied himself with the clothes on the counter. Stella pursed her lips, tasted Michael on her skin, and wiped the moisture away with the back of her hand. From the look on the older woman's face, she'd seen everything, and was curious. Round-lensed glasses perched on the top of her head, at a gravity-defying angle, and her black hair was pulled back in a ponytail, though several strands stood out in busy disarray. She wore a houndstooth sweater and green plaid pants. Like Michael, she wore a measuring tape around her neck. The woman held out a deconstructed garment and pointed to a section of a seam. The two of them proceeded to speak in a rapid tonal language that had to be Vietnamese. As he bent over the garment with that sexy, thinking look on his face, the woman aimed a distracted smile at Stella and patted Michael's arm. I taught him when he was little, and now he teaches me back. Stella eked out a smile. Had his mother just caught them kissing? She tried to find similarities between them, but nothing stuck out. Michael's facial features were a striking balance of eastern edges and western angles, broad-shouldered, thick, and vital. He towered over the petite woman. Stella pushed her glasses up and smoothed her hands over her skirt, wishing she had a white lab coat and a stethoscope. On the other side of the open back door, racks of in-process clothes and various commercial sewing machines cluttered a large workspace. A mechanized circular rack carrying clothes in plastic wrap occupied the far left side of the room, and countless spools of thread in every shade imaginable lined the walls. The little old lady from earlier sat on a worn couch in the right corner, watching muted television on an ancient CRT. The lawn shears were nowhere in sight.
"What do you do for a living? Are you a doctor?"
the woman asked with ill-disguised hope. "No, I'm an econometrician." Stella linked her fingers together and stared at the tips of her shoes, awaiting disappointment.
"Is that economics?"
Stella's eyes darted back up in surprise. "Yes, it is, but with more math."
"Has your girlfriend met Janie yet?"
she asked Michael. Michael looked up from his garment, his expression worried. "Mom, no. She hasn't met Janie, and she isn't my..." He stopped speaking, and his gaze jumped from his mom to Stella. His dilemma was perfectly clear. What did they call one another in public situations now?
"She's not what?"
his mom asked in confusion. He cleared his throat as he focused on the garment in his hands. "She hasn't met Janie." Warmth splashed at Stella's body in unexpected waves. He didn't correct his mom. Did that mean they were going by boyfriend and girlfriend in public situations? A desperate yearning gripped Stella, surprising her in its intensity. "Who's Janie?" Stella managed to ask. She remembered that name from before.
"Janie is his sister."
There was a thinking slant to his mom's eyes before she brightened and said,
"You should come to our house for dinner tonight. Talk to Janie about economics, huh? She's studying that at Stanford and is trying to get a job. His other sisters will want to meet you, too. We didn't know he had a new girlfriend."
His mom's words swamped whatever giddiness she'd experienced from being called Michael's girlfriend. House, dinner, sisters. The words rattled around in her head, refusing to make sense.
"Just come, huh? Even if you two have plans, you still have to eat. Michael can make his bun. His bun is very good. I forgot to ask, what is your name?"
Dazed, she said, "Stella. Stella Lane.
Call me Maya."
It sounded like meh, but with an unusual tonal dip in the middle.
"Maya?"
Stella repeated. His mother smiled her approval.
"Don't eat anything before you come, huh? We have lots of food."
With that, she brushed her hands together like business was settled, filled out the invoice slip for Stella's clothes, and handed it to her.
"This will be ready Tuesday morning."
In a state of panic, Stella stuffed the slip into her purse, murmured a quiet thank you, and walked out to her car, passing by his grandmother's herb garden. At least, she assumed the old lady was his grandmother. As she sat down in the driver's seat, his mom's words repeated in her head. House. Dinner. Sisters. The front door swung open and Michael jogged to her side. She opened the window and he propped his hands on the side of the car.
"You don't have to come if you don't want to."
A notch formed between his eyebrows as he hesitated.
"But maybe..."
"Maybe what?" she heard herself ask.
"Maybe it's the kind of practice you wanted."
"You'd let me practice with your family?" The fact that he trusted her with the important people in his life touched her in ways she didn't understand, made her feel off-kilter. That yearning from earlier returned.
"Would you be good to them?"
he asked with a searching gaze. "Yes, of course." She always strove to be good to people.
"And keep our arrangement between us?"
They don't know about what I do. She nodded. That went without saying.
Then I'm okay with it, if you want to. Do you?
Yes, I do. But not because she wanted practice.
Let's do it then.
His eyes fell to her lips.
Come closer.
She leaned toward him but glanced at the front of the shop. She might be watch. He pressed a soft kiss to her mouth. Just one. And he pulled away.
See you tonight.
Chapter 13. When Michael walked back into the shop, his mom was watching him with her arms crossed. Through the display window, she had a clear view of Stella's white Tesla as it backed out of the parking lot. He was certain she'd watch the kiss. That was why he'd made it so short when what he'd really wanted to do was kiss Stella until her eyes glazed over. She had his body tied up in so many knots, he could barely see straight, let alone think. And she'd caught him off guard here in the shop. That had to be why he'd accepted her proposal, when he'd already convinced himself to do the right thing and turn her down. She hadn't teased him, and she hadn't laughed. Instead, she'd been impressed with his work, and with him. The real him. No one wanted the real him. Only Stella. In that moment of weakness, he'd recklessly tossed his reservations aside. He'd said yes for no other reason than he wanted to be with her. But now everything was spiraling out of control, lines were blurring, and he couldn't distinguish his professional life from his personal life. He might not even want to. His mom thought Stella was his for real, and he liked that way too much for his own comfort. Saying yes had been a giant mistake. He already regretted it, and felt how wrong it was, even if he wasn't entirely sure why. But it was too late now. It was just a month. He was a professional. He could handle a month.
Stella,
his mom said, like she was testing out the sound of the name. Michael gathered up Stella's clothes and headed into the work area. She followed right behind him.
I like her much better than that stripper you dated 3 years ago.
She was a dancer.
Okay, yeah, she'd also been a stripper. He'd been young, and she'd had an awesome body and all those pole moves.
That one left her dirty underwear in a cup for me to find when I came over.
Michael rubbed the back of his neck. Even after 3 years of escorting, he still didn't understand the strange power games that happened between women.
I broke up with her.
It had just been about the sex anyway. His dad was a cheater, and rather than commit and hurt people, Michael had spent his early 20s keeping things impersonal. To be honest, it had been a lot of fun, and he'd gone a little crazy, pretty much fucking anyone who showed interest. His memories of the time were a rainbow haze of women's underwear. When disaster hit and he needed money, he'd thought, why not get money for it? In his previous line of work, he'd dealt with lots of wealthy older women who propositioned him from time to time. All he'd had to do was accept. Plus, it was a perfect slap in the face to his dad, the reason for the disaster in the first place.
That was an expensive car Stella drove, his mom noted.
Michael shrugged, put Stella's clothes with the other items that needed to be sent out for dry cleaning, and seated himself at his sewing machine. In Vietnamese, his mom said,
She really likes you. I can tell these things. Who likes him?
Mwai piped up from her place in front of the TV, where she was in the middle of watching Return of the Condor Heroes for the millionth time. The old one starring Andy Lau, where the kung fu fighting condor was a man in a giant bird suit.
A customer,
his mom answered.
The one in the gray skirt? You saw her? I had my eye on her from the first second I saw her. She's a good girl. Michael should marry her.
I'm right here, Michael said, and I'm not marrying anyone.
That wasn't an option when he had to escort. He could still remember all the times when his dad had left during his childhood, the way his mom cried herself to sleep, the way she fell apart but still stayed strong for Michael and his sisters,
and never missed a day of work. Michael would never hurt a woman by cheating. Never. Not that Stella would ever want to marry him. Why the hell was he thinking about this anyway? They'd been on 3 dates. No, not dates. Sessions. Appointments. They were in a practice relationship. This wasn't real.
Did I raise you to go kissing people's daughters like that if you're not going to marry them? His mom asked.
He stared up at the ceiling in frustration. No.
She's good enough for you, Michael.
Ridiculous. Like he was some kind of rare prize.
I mmed her agreement.
And pretty, too.
Michael smiled then. Stella was pretty, and she didn't know it. She was also smart, sweet, caring, brave, and... His mom laughed and pointed at him.
Look at your face. Don't try to tell me you don't like her. It's clear as day. I'm glad you finally got some good taste in women. Keep this one.
Why? Michael's smile froze in place. They were right. He did like Stella, and he wished he didn't. He knew he didn't get to keep her. Stella parked at the address Michael had texted her, and worried the flowers and chocolates she'd brought were entirely the wrong thing to bring. A Google search of Vietnamese etiquette had told her she really needed to bring something, though the recommendations on actual gifts had been mixed and confusing, ranging from fruit to tea to alcohol. The overall consensus appeared to be that edible was best. Thus, the Godiva chocolates in her passenger seat. But what if they didn't like chocolate? She'd been tempted to ask Michael, but he didn't need to know how neurotic she was or how big of a deal meeting new people was for her. And these weren't just any people. These were Michael's family. Important people. And she wanted to give a good impression. Toward that end, she'd spent the day devising conversation trees in her head, so she could minimize the need for social improvising, which often ended badly for her. If she was asked what she did, she had a quick explanation and follow-up questions ready. If they asked about her hobbies and interests, she was prepared. If they asked how she'd met Michael, she'd make him explain. She was a terrible liar. For several stomach-twisting moments, she ran through her list of pre-socialization reminders. Think before you talk. Anything and everything can be an insult to someone. When in doubt, say nothing. Be nice. Sitting on your hands prevents fidgeting and feels good. Make eye contact. Smile. No teeth. That's scary. Don't start thinking about work. Don't let yourself talk about work. No one wants to hear about it. Please and thank you. Apologize with feeling. Grabbing the bouquet of Gerbera daisies and dark chocolate truffles, she got out of her car and stared at the 2-story East Palo Alto house. When she'd first moved here 5 years ago, this area had been the ghetto. With Silicon Valley's continued expansion and success, East Palo Alto land values had skyrocketed. All of the homes nearby were now million-dollar real estate. Even this modest little gray house, with its cracked cement driveway and scraggly landscaping that, upon closer inspection, consisted of thriving knee-high herbs. As she walked toward the front door where flies and moths buzzed around the bright porch light, she ran a palm over the scratchy tops of the plants, appreciating the fresh smell. She loved that Grandma liked to keep busy. She pressed on the doorbell button and waited. No one came. Her gut knotted. She knocked. Nothing. She knocked louder. Still nothing. She confirmed the address on her phone. This was the right place. Michael's M3 was even parked in the driveway. Before she could drive herself crazy deciding what to do, the door opened. Michael smiled at her. Right on time. She tightened her grip on the stuff she'd brought, basically having an internal meltdown of uncertainty. I don't know if I got the right things. He unloaded the flowers and chocolate from her hands with an odd expression on his face.
You didn't have to bring anything.
Really? Panic surged. Oh, I can take them back. Let me put them... He set the items on a side table and stroked a thumb over her cheek. My mom will love them. Thank you. She released a long breath. What happens now? The corner of his mouth kicked up.
I think the usual greeting is a hug.
Oh. She held her hands out awkwardly and stepped toward him, certain she was doing everything wrong, until his arms wrapped around her, and he pulled her close. His scent, his warmth, and his solidness surrounded her. That was 100% right. He pulled away with a soft look in his eyes. Ready? At her nod, he ushered her through a marble-tiled entryway, past a formal dining area, and into a kitchen that was open to an adjoining family room. The massive boxy TV in the room grabbed her attention. A man and a woman in traditional Chinese opera attire took turns warbling out similar series of notes. After a particularly impassioned iteration, Michael's grandma clapped. Sitting next to her at the kitchen table, his mom paused in the process of peeling mangoes to voice her appreciation. When she noticed Stella and Michael, his mom waved with her peeler.
Hello. We eat soon.
Stella worked up a smile and a wave. Bracing herself for an evening of nerve-wracking social performance, she approached them and asked, Can I help? A wide smile stretched over Michael's mom's face, and she set her peeler and the plate she'd used to gather mango peels in front of the empty chair to her left. When Stella unbuttoned her cuffs, Michael flashed her a grin and turned on the gas range. As she washed her hands in the kitchen sink, she watched him heat a large wok, pour oil in, and add ingredients in the careless yet somehow intentional manner of someone who knew how to cook. By the time she sat down next to his mom, the air was heavy with the scents of barbecuing beef, garlic, lemongrass, and fish sauce. He'd rolled his sleeves up to his elbows, and she couldn't help admiring his sculpted forearms as he stirred the contents of the wok. It took effort to redirect her attention to the mango, and she'd just begun to peel the large fruit his mom had handed her, when the tinkling of a piano in another room caught her attention. The opening notes of Fur Elise clashed with the vibrato trilling from the TV, and Stella blinked as the sounds tore her head in multiple directions, making it difficult to think.
That's Janie playing, his mom said. She's good, eh?
Stella nodded distractedly. She is. The piano's out of tune, though, especially the bass A. Every time that flat note rang, she winced inside. You should get it tuned. It's bad for the piano to leave it untuned too long. His mom's brows rose in interest.
Do you know how to tune pianos?
No, she laughed. The idea of trying to tune her Steinway herself was ludicrous. She'd probably destroy the instrument with her bungling.
You should never tune your piano yourself. Michael's dad used to tune ours,
his mom said with a frown, as she focused on cutting the giant seed from her peeled mango.
He did a good job. He said it was a waste of money when he knew how.
Where is he? When can he fix it? His mom pushed away from the table with a tight smile.
I have something for you to try. Let me heat it up.
While Michael's mom dug in the fridge, his grandma pointed to the bowl of already sliced mango. Stella dutifully plucked a small slice from the bowl and ate it, enjoying the sweet tang of the fruit. His grandma mmmed and returned to peeling her mango. Stella released a small breath as her stomach relaxed. She liked sitting with grandma most of all. The language barrier made conversation next to impossible, and that was perfectly fine with Stella. Fur Elise ended, and the tension in her head eased as the sources of sound dropped from 2 to 1. A youngish sister in jeans, a t-shirt, and a messy ponytail flopped into the kitchen, picked a bean sprout from a colander on the center island, and popped it in her mouth. When she noticed Stella, she waved.
Stella, right? I'm Janie.
She plucked another bean sprout from the colander, but her mom slapped the back of her hand and she yanked her hand back with a yelp. Her mom stuck a container in the microwave and shooed her toward the table with a fast torrent of Vietnamese. Janie sat across from her with an easy grin that was higher on one side. Michael's grin.
So, how do you like the Vietnamese opera?
Stella lifted her shoulder in a non-committal way. Janie laughed and ate a large mango slice.
that good, huh? Before Stella could think up a response, Michael's mom set a plastic container on the table and opened the lid. Steam rose from a light green spongy cake.
Eat, huh?
Ban ba. It's very good.
Stella set her peeler and fruit down and stretched a hand toward the container when she noticed it was cheap plastic, like the kind takeout came in.
You shouldn't microwave these kinds of containers. The food probably has BPA in it now.
It was basically poison as far as Stella was concerned. His mom pulled the container closed and smelled the cake.
No, it's fine. No BPA.
Glass or Pyrex are more expensive, but they're safe, Stella said.
How had no one told Michael's mom this? Did they want her to get sick?
I use these all the time, and no problem.
Blinking rapidly, his mom held the lid of the container to her chest.
You wouldn't notice right away. It's repeated exposure over time. You should really invest.
Janie snatched the plastic container from her mom and stuffed a piece of green poison cake into her mouth.
These are my favorite. I love them,
sending Stella a pointed look. Janie had a second one. Michael marched to the table and took the container from his sister before she could eat a third piece.
It's true, Maya. These containers really are bad. I never thought about it. You shouldn't use them.
When he tossed it in the garbage, his mom protested in Vietnamese. Was the lady upset because Stella didn't want anyone to eat poison? Janie pushed away from the table and left the kitchen as two girls stormed inside. They were both 20-something with long dark brown hair, pale olive-toned skin, and lean leggy builds. If Stella hadn't already learned the hard way that questions like this irritated people, she would have asked if they were twins.
You fat cow! Why didn't you ask before you took it and spilled wine on it? While you were making out with my boyfriend?
One girl shouted. Stella flinched, and her already anxious heart squeezed. Fighting was her absolute least favorite thing. When people fought, it always felt like a personal attack for her. It didn't matter if she was just a bystander.
You said you two were through, and I was curious. Also, I wouldn't have spilled all over it if it fit right. Who's the fat cow now?
The second girl shouted back. Grandma picked up a black remote and squinted at the buttons. As vertical green lines crawled across the screen and the volume climbed, the music went from distracting to unpleasant.
That's it! I'm taking back all the jeans I gave you!
The first girl shouted, even louder to be heard over the TV.
Go ahead and take them. Show what a selfish bitch you are.
Grandma muttered and increased the volume yet again. Stella set the peeler down with shaky hands and tried to slow her breathing. This was getting to be too much. Two more girls walked into the kitchen. One was shorter and darker than the rest and looked to be about Stella's age. The other one was high school young. They had to all be his sisters. One, two, three, four, five of them. The short one stabbed a finger in the twins' direction.
You two are going to stop fighting right now.
They scoffed and crossed their arms in almost the exact same manner.
Ever since you moved out and left us with Mom's problems, you lost the right to say anything to us,
the first sister said. The short sister rolled forward like a tank.
Now that she's stable, it's time for me to live my life, too. Try to think of others for once in your lives. So now we're the selfish ones?
The second sister asked.
You're out hobnobbing at work parties, and we're home holding Mom's hair while she vomits after her chemo treatments. She's not doing chemo right now, right?
The short sister looked at Michael for confirmation. His mom snatched the remote from Grandma and maxed out the volume on the TV before she went to putter around by the sink. Stella rested damp palms on the glass surface of the table. This had to stop eventually. She just had to outlast them.
She was, but she didn't respond well, so they switched her to a drug trial,
Michael provided.
Why didn't anyone tell me? Because you're so goddamned busy with your important crap. Why else? Mom didn't want to stress you out more than you always are,
one of the twins said.
Finding out this way is stressing me out worse. Boo-hoo, Angie,
the other twin said. As the sniping continued, a harsh beeping sounded,
and his mom took a white colander out of the microwave. Using tongs, she put steaming rice noodles into a large bowl along with the beef Michael had stir-fried and an assortment of greens. She placed the bowl in front of Stella with a polite smile.
Michael's bun. You'll like it.
Stella's chin bobbed on a jerky nod. A suspicion rose, and she snuck a glance at the colander. She pushed the bowl away. The colander is made of plastic. No one should eat this. His mom froze, and a tide of red swept over her face as she stared first at Stella, and then the bowl.
Let me make new noodles.
Before his mom could touch the bowl, Michael grabbed it.
I'll do it. Sit, Maya.
His expression was strained as he removed the poisoned food, and Stella had the horrible feeling that she'd said the wrong thing. But she didn't know how else she could have navigated the situation. His mom sat down and eyed Michael's sisters as they continued their argument in a loose square by the refrigerator. Sighing, she picked up her peeler and resumed where she'd left off with her last mango. Stella kept her eyes on her own work, growing more and more nervous with every passing moment. She was painfully aware of the lack of conversation between them, and her instincts urged her to fill the silence, if silence was even the right word. His mom wasn't speaking, but his sisters were, and the TV had been blasting this whole time. When the piano started playing again, her nerves stretched to the breaking point. That flat A note rang 1, 2, 3, 4 times. Had anything ever been so irritating?
You really should get the piano tuned, she said. Where is your husband again?
When his mom continued peeling her mango without answering, Stella assumed she hadn't heard the question. So she asked again.
Where is he?
He's gone,
his mom said in a final tone.
Does that mean he's passed away?
Should she offer condolences? She wasn't sure what to say now. His mom sighed, keeping her eyes on her mango.
I don't know.
The answer tripped Stella up, and she frowned as she asked, Are you divorced, then?
I can't divorce him if I can't find him.
Stella stared at Michael's mom in complete bafflement.
What do you mean, you can't find him? Was he in an accident, or...
A large hand gripped her shoulder and squeezed with firm pressure. Michael, the noodles are almost done. Do you eat peanuts? She blinked at the interruption.
Sure, I'm not allergic.
When he nodded and went to the kitchen island, she refocused on his mom.
How long has he been gone? Have you filed a missing person
Stella!
Michael's voice split through the air, a startling reprimand. His sisters stopped arguing, and all eyes locked on her. Her heart pounded louder than the TV and the piano.
What had she done?
We don't talk about my dad, he said.
That didn't make any sense.
But what if he's hurt, or...
You can't hurt someone when they don't have a heart,
his mom interrupted.
He left us all to be with another woman. I want to divorce him, but I don't know where to send the papers. He changed his phone number.
His mom pushed her chair back and stood.
Maya's tired. You kids eat, huh? Maybe go buy something for Michael's girlfriend if she doesn't like what we have.
His mom left, and the piano music ended abruptly. His grandma turned off the opera, leaving the room quiet but for the crackling of the TV's static discharge. The sudden quietness was a relief, but it felt ominous somehow. Her blood rushed, her head throbbed, and her breaths came in short gasps like she'd been running. Or maybe she was preparing to run. Janie hurried into the kitchen.
What just happened? Why is Mom crying?
No one answered, but 7 sets of eyes accused her. It was worse than all the noise from before. Far, far worse. She'd made Michael's mom cry. Stella's face flamed with embarrassment and guilt, and she jumped to her feet.
I'm so sorry. I need to go.
Ducking her head, she gathered her purse and fled. Michael stared at the doorway Stella had rushed through, feeling like he'd watched a car accident in slow motion. A mix of unholy emotion coursed through his veins. Anger, horror, shame, disbelief, shock. What the fuck had just happened? What did he do now? His instincts urged him to chase after her.
You better go check on